All rise.
Thank you. You may be seated. Much appreciated. All right. Well, welcome to the Third Court of Appeals. Justice Kelly, myself, and Justice Theofanis are very happy to have you here today. And this was more of what I expected in our first OA today, especially in light of what's happening next door. I wasn't expecting many people to attend this hearing or the one before, because we have other very big hearings going on in the state of Texas. But as you know, this matter will be broadcast simultaneously and will be available to any of your clients or any individuals that would like to watch this argument remotely later on the court's YouTube channel. Today we are hearing 03-21577-CV, Texas Department of Public Safety versus DMS. And if I can ask for counsels to briefly introduce yourself and state your whether your client's ready.
Jenny Hudson with the Texas Department of Public Safety.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Sam Bragg, the firm of Holston Berg, and I'm here with Sarah Jennings from the Texas Residence Project.
All right, thank you. Y'all can be seated. Councils, I know that you're familiar with how this proceeding occurs, that you've got 20 minutes aside. If you choose to take that amount of time or not, no worries, up to you. And then at 2 minutes, the yellow light will go on. Please start wrapping up your thoughts in that regard. And at the red light, your time is up. We'll anticipate that Ms. Hudson would utilize 15 minutes and reserve 5 for rebuttal, and that Mr. Bragg will do his full 20 minutes if he chooses to use that. We have received from the appellees oral argument exhibits in advance, and of course those were in your briefing anyway, all of those things. With that, we are ready to proceed, and so Ms. Hudson, I turn it over to you, ma'am. You just bend it, it's tough.
I'm short, so.
And may I ask one thing before you get started? I'm pretty sure you both will do this, but I like to sometimes get my questions out first just so that you know what I'm really interested in hearing. I want to hear from both sides. If you distinguish this case from RPGP, how you distinguish it, and if you do distinguish it, how you go from arrest versus offense or offense versus arrest a consideration of this expunction. So that's a huge issue for me to hear from each side. Okay. Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Janine Hudson. I represent the Texas Department of Public Safety. This is a civil expunction case, which is a complex statute, but the issues are simple. The overarching question is if an offense resolved under Section 12.45 of the Penal Code meets the statutory requirements to be expunged under Chapter 55 of the Code of Criminal Procedure. It does not for three reasons. It resulted in a final conviction, the statute of limitations did not bar prosecution, and there was no dismissal. At the outset, I want to clarify, which should address your first question, that there is no question under Ex Parte RPGP that misdemeanors are offense-based and not arrest-based. But that opinion does not contain any mention of 1245 cases, and it does not change the outcome of this case because the focus is on whether this particular misdemeanor meets the requirements for expunction. In this particular case, the main reasons that it cannot meet the requirements for expunction are first that it resulted in a final conviction, which makes it ineligible for expunction under 55.01A2.
Can I ask you, so under your analysis, are 1245 and final conviction sort of interchangeable? It makes no difference whether it was a 1245 or just, you know, a final judgment of conviction?
I wouldn't say they're interchangeable, but the result of a 1245 is that that particular offense is incorporated into the sentence on the convicted offense. So as several courts have, you know, determined, including this one, prior to RPGP, that makes it, that means that that particular offense resulted in the final conviction. It's not like community supervision, where it says community supervision for the offense, which is the language that RPGP dealt with. So in this case, the 1245 resulted in that final conviction, therefore it's part of the consideration on the final conviction and can't be expunged. For at least that's one reason why we think it can't be expunged.
So in your view, if any offense is 1245 into the conviction, then that whatever that offense is becomes adhered and permanently part of that conviction.
Yes, and that's what the courts that have looked at it prior to RPGP have said. So far, there's only been one court that addressed 1245's post-RPGP, and it basically looked at the prior line of cases and said, yeah, this still is the same thing. It doesn't change that. So,
And who did that?
That was In re Ross, which was out of the Fifth Court of Appeals in June of 2021. And that basically, I mean, because RPGP is so new, there just haven't really been a lot of opinions. And there were not a whole ton of opinions before that dealt with 1245 specifically, because it's kind of a rare instance to get us to appeal. So.
And was a petition filed on that case or no to the Supreme Court?
On that, I don't believe it was.
But the discussion of 1245 in Ross was dicta, right?
It was, because that wasn't specifically a 1245 case, but they did reference all of the prior line of cases and basically said we don't see why this would have changed. So
what is the purpose of 1245D in your view?
As far as prosecution goes, or?
Yes, I mean, just generally, what's the purpose of that statute? What's the reasoning behind it or the underpinning?
Well, I'll caption this with, I'm not a prosecutor, so y'all have more experience there than I do. But the 1245 is really, it's a plea and bar. So what it is the person admits guilt to the offense. So a little bit, you know, more of a step, it's certainly not a dismissal. There's admission of guilt to the offense that they're pleading or that they're 1245ing into the conviction. And then they agree in exchange, you know, in consideration for not prosecuting them on that offense, then they'll, you know, have it taken into consideration in the sentencing on the conviction. So in theory, it kind of enhances the conviction on the other offense that they're pleading to.
And then in this case, I know this was a plea bargain case, right? Was
yes.
Was a plea bargain with an agreed term or with an open plea to the court?
It did have a term. I think it was a year of
okay.
Yeah.
So in this particular case, the punishment wasn't, you know, open in a sense to the judge, right? Whether they considered this other offense or not under 1245.
Right.
Okay.
So besides a final conviction, there's multiple reasons under the statute that they have to meet all the requirements for to be able to expunge it. So the second point that I want to make is that the statute of limitations is not the reason prosecution is barred for this offense. Under 5501A2B, even if it's not a final conviction, then they have to meet the requirement that, which is actually in your binders that the opposing counsel provided, that prosecution is barred because the statute of limitations expired. Well, in this case, if the statute of limitations expired, which there's no information on the record on when that happened, if it did, but that has to be the reason that prosecution is barred. In this case, the plea and bar, the 1245 agreement, barred prosecution on this offense well before any statute of limitations ran. So if that's the case, then they can't meet the requirement under 5501A2B.
But it's not in dispute that isn't the statute of limitations for possession of marijuana 2 years?
3,
it is, although, again, it's the petitioner that's seeking the expunction has the burden of proving that, and all that they proved, you know, the findings of fact at the trial, all that they proved was that it's not unlimited. But we don't know when it expired or have a date or anything like that to be able to tell that they met that burden of proof. The other piece of it is, you know, just like with a conviction or when something's placed on deferred, there are a lot of instances where the statute would be told. for some period of time. So it's unclear, and certainly there's nothing really on the record that shows how long this one was told because of the plea and bar or anything else. So, I mean, presumably they couldn't, you know, the expiration of the statute of limitations would keep them from being able to prosecute it, yes, but they already couldn't prosecute it because of the plea and bar. So, then the third reason for why this offense is not entitled to an expunction is that the charging instrument was never dismissed or quashed, and definitely not for any of the statutory reasons required under 5501A2A2. The statute basically requires there to be a dismissal or quashing of the instrument, and there's not one. There's no dismissal anywhere in the record. It was never dismissed. Even if the, as the findings of fact from the trial court state, even if the plea and bar was found to be effectively a dismissal, it's really not. And the statute clearly knows how to delineate between different types of dispositions. It's not an acquittal, it's not a pardon, it's not a, you know, dismissal. They didn't mention plea and bar in the expunction statute, so that's not a specific reason that would allow them to have an expunction. And again, because the petitioner seeking expunction has the burden of proof, they've got to show that they meet the requirements. And if the requirement isn't there that allows this type of expunction, they don't get it. I mean, there are methods to change the statute. The statute has been changed almost every session since it was created in 1995. There's, I think, four sessions where it didn't get messed with. So the legislature clearly knows how to add stuff if they think it needs to be included, or how to change the language if they think there's something that got left out. And they haven't done that in any number of cases, even with all the numerous changes that have been made. There's still nothing that has included 1245 plea and bar as a reason that would allow you to get an expunction. Since the offense in question here does not meet all of the statutory requirements, DMS cannot meet her burden of proving entitlement to an expunction. Therefore, expunction must be denied. There's no such thing as an equitable expunction. So the only way that you get it is to check off all the boxes in the statute.
So going back to the chief's original question about RPGP, your distinction is that this is not a 1245 case. What about, is there anything else that you would distinguish that case from?
Yeah, so RPGP doesn't mention 1245 at all. It concentrates on the other distinction is the piece of the language that it's looking at. It's looking at the language regarding community supervision for any offense that changed to for the offense, and that's actually after the final conviction piece of the statute. So the resulted in a final conviction is not necessarily, you know, limited to for that offense. It, you would have to add words to the statute to create that. Another distinction, like I said, is there are 1245 cases that have dealt with the specific language, and RPGP didn't overturn them, didn't mention them, didn't change them, and at least N. Ray Ross seems to think they're still in effect. So.
And in RPGP, do you believe that the individual seeking the expunction rigorously went through the statutory elements to get the expunction, or did they, in getting the expunction, convince the court to weave in new language to the statute?
So I think that they read the language that was there. It had been previously interpreted by numerous courts of appeals to be all-encompassing. But what the court did really was look past the initial language of 5501, that is the umbrella that, you know, all records and files related to the arrest. They basically looked past that and said, okay, well, that's a general reference, but these are the specifics for how a particular offense should be handled. In those cases, just like in the GBE case, the difference between those and this is it was a charge that was reduced to a lesser offense, a lesser included offense. They dismissed the one and then convicted or did community supervision, I think, in RPGP for the second one. And they basically said, okay, consider it separately because this dismissed charge can be on its own, meet all the requirements, then it can be expunged, but the one that obviously that they were convicted or did supervision on cannot be. So I think this is kind of where you fall in the difference, is there was no dismissal here. It was a plea and bar. Mm. So separately by itself, that offense can't be expunged. It doesn't meet the requirements. I think that's kind of where you get the distinction from our PGP.
Okay. So. All right.
And what would be your response to the appellee's argument about your interpretation changes the language from a offense to any offense?
That language isn't in the section resulted in a final conviction. It just says resulted in a final conviction. So it is dealing with that offense. And this offense did result in that final conviction, even though 1245 and convictions can be distinct. But it is part of that final conviction. So.
Anything further, justices? And I don't mean to cut you off. You've got more time, counsel.
That's okay. I was just going to close by saying DMS cannot meet her burden of proving entitlement to an expunction for this particular offense. The offense resulted in a final conviction. The statute of limitations was not the reason barring prosecution, and there's no dismissal of this offense. They have to meet, even if you find that it's not a final conviction, they have to meet one or the other. It's got to either be a dismissal or the statute of limitations has to be the reason barring expunction. And they can't meet the requirements here. So for these reasons, the department prays that this court reverse the district court's order and render judgment denying the expunction.
All right. Thank you, counsel. And Mr. Bragg. You may proceed, counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Again, my name is Sam Bragg, and I represent the appellee DMS. The importance of an expunction here cannot be overstated. My client's record has been a shadow over her life for almost every area of her life. She's been denied multiple jobs because of her record. She's a mother and provider for her 12-year-old daughter, but because of her record, she's not been able to obtain affordable housing here in Austin, and they're forced to live with her family, as opposed to having a home of their own. This all began in 2017 when my client pled guilty to one count of a misdemeanor assault. Now, it's not in dispute that that misdemeanor assault resulted in a final conviction, making it ineligible for expunction. At the same time, though, at the time of the plea, however, my client also disposed of a possession of marijuana charge under 1245, and because that was unadjudicated, it did not result in a final conviction, and is eligible for expunction. That's what the trial court found, and that's the offense that's at issue here today.
And of course, Mr. Bragg, I'm sure you'll talk about just what counsel for the state just ended on. It either has to be a dismissal or the statute of limitations, and it wasn't either of those. It wasn't dismissed, nor did the statute of limitations bar its prosecution because 1245 did. But you just said it wasn't an adjudication, and that's how we get there. So how do you distinguish between those two things? They're very hard and fast, very black and white on both sides.
Yes, Your Honor. So I think there are two points that the state made, which were looking at dismissals and then looking at the statute of limitations. So starting with dismissals, if the court actually would like to look at Exhibit 1 in the oral argument exhibits, this sets out the expunction statute, and it's got some highlighting for the elements that are at issue here today. The elements that are highlighted in green are not in dispute on appeal. The one in red, that the charge, if any, has not resulted in a final conviction, is. There's no requirement. My client moved for expunction, petitioned for expunction under 5501A2B. There's no dismissal requirement there. The dismissal requirement, if the court would look at the top of the second page of this printout, it's in A2A2, that it's that top line, if presented at any time following the rest was dismissed or quashed. And so there's no requirement of a dismissal under A2B. If the court goes down to A2B, prosecution of the person for the offense is no longer possible because the limitations period has expired, but there's no dismissal requirement there. So that is on the face of the statute, would take out the aspect of dismissal, to obtain an expunction under 5501A2B does not require showing a dismissal. And while it is correct that the trial court found that this was the functional equivalent of a dismissal, that really doesn't drive the analysis under 5501A2B.
Okay, but statute of limitations is in there, so.
Absolutely, Your Honor. So the statute of limitations is obviously one of the elements, but I would begin by saying that this has been waived on appeal. There's not a mention of the statute of limitations in appellant's brief. There's not any discussion of that element. That said, that element has been met, and that was something that was found by the trial court, which is part of the reason why a waiver here is so important, is the trial court found that the statute of limitations is run. This was a 2-year statute of limitations, as Justice Kelly pointed out, because mm-hmm. it's a possession of marijuana offense. And so it ran quite a long time ago following the 1245.
And how do you address the argument that it couldn't have run because really what ended everything was 1245? And that ended way in advance of the running of the 2 years.
Yes, Your Honor. So under Texas law, a statute of limitations is told at the time of an indictment, but the tolling ends at any time that the indictment is rendered invalid for any reason. And so this also, again, because the issue was waived, hasn't really been briefed, but the tolling of the statute of limitations here would have resumed because the indictment would have been invalid as a result of the case being barred by 1245. Which kind of brings me to the other point that appellant made, which was that in order to be eligible for expunction under 5501A2B, it has to be barred by the statute of limitations, and appellant made the argument that it was barred by the fact that it was 1245. And those two are not mutually exclusive. It would be the same as if someone brought a claim against a plaintiff and they had multiple affirmative defenses. They could say, you know, it's barred for this reason or it's barred for this reason. And here, if a charge was brought against my client for this possession of marijuana offense, she would, in both situations, would say, you know, it's barred by the fact that I 1245 this, but it is also barred by the statute of limitations. They're not mutually exclusive. 5501A2B just simply addresses that the limitations period has expired, which the record is clear here that it has. And additionally, once again, this has been waived. This court has found in prior cases that it does not have the discretion to look at issues that have not been raised in the appellant's opening brief.
So in your view, when you read B, you end the sentence at possible. Prosecution for the offense for which the person was arrested is no longer possible, period. In your view, because the limitations has expired, doesn't matter. It could be because the limitations has expired, because it's 1245, under your analogy, like, you know, this is just like affirmative defenses. Is that accurate, or?
No, Your Honor. So take, for example, the situation where an offense had been 1245, so prosecution is barred, but the statute of limitations had not run, then an expunction would not be available under 5501A2B. It would only be the situation where the prosecution would also be barred because the statute of limitations had run, so the elements of the expunction statute were met. So the fact that it's barred for another reason wouldn't change the fact that it is also barred by the statute of limitations. But if the bar from the statute of limitations isn't met, then there's no basis for expunction under that section.
I want to ask you something I asked the appellant. What's the purpose of 1245D? What's the purpose of that statute?
So this court actually, in a case cited in our brief, JSH explains that 1245 is a statute for defendants that provides a slate clearing function, and it allows individuals who have multiple offenses against them to clear the slate, to admit guilt and take personal responsibility for them at the sentencing stage, but to clear the board of those offenses so that they're not like sitting over them and there's not a cloud of these offenses sitting over them. And this is a similar function that is served by the expunction statute, which also serves to some degree a slate clearing function so that individuals don't have to live with a permanent shadow and a permanent record that's burdening their lives. Which brings me to, I think, RPGP. So we've talked about statute of limitations, we've talked about dismissal. The question Chief Justice Byrne asked about RPGP, about whether it's distinguishable, how it applies here, and I think RPGP is, the key here is that RPGP applies here and is controlling. So RPGP is distinguishable in the fact that it did not address 1245 offenses, but the key to RPGP is not whether it addressed a certain type of offense, it's how it taught, or not taught, but explained how to read section 5501A2 of the expunction statute. So the one requirement that was at issue and actually briefed by the parties was this 5501A2 requirement of no final conviction. And that's within the prerequisites to expunction in 5501A2. And the Texas Supreme Court in RPGP stated, and I'm wanting to quote the language, but the court said, construing the statute contextually and affording meaning to each word, we hold the prerequisites to expunction, so this no final conviction requirement, are offense-based. And that's really what is dispositive here about whether a 1245 defense results in a final conviction. So kind of the practical question in looking at whether the statute is offense-based or arrest-based is whether other offenses can be taken into consideration. If a provision of the expunction statute is offense-based, then offenses have to be considered individually without reference to other offenses. And that's what RPGP kind of explained.
And do you think that the court in Dallas just got it wrong, in Ray Ross, that made their decision in June?
Well, yes, Your Honor. But I don't think it was because they analyzed the issue and got it wrong. I think it was, if the court looks at the facts in that case, it didn't involve a 1245 offense. And so the court there was doing some comparison, but didn't engage with the issue of how ex parte RPGP affected 1245 decisions. And if you actually look at the cases relied on by the In re Ross court, there's four cases that are relied on, and all of them rely on an arrest-based approach to reading the expunction statute and the no final conviction requirement, and that's exactly what RPGP said we can't do. So,
counsel, can I interrupt? I want to ask you a similar question too. I asked opposing counsel, is now 1245 tantamount to a conviction under post RPGP? So is your position that 1245 is basically equal footing with the dismissal? There's no difference from the RPGP analysis point of view.
So I, Your Honor, I would not say it was equal with a dismissal. I think that's still a little bit apples and oranges. I would say that a 1245 offense does not result in a final conviction. And the reason why is courts across Texas have agreed that in order for there to be a final conviction, there has to be an adjudication of guilt. And the 1245 defenses, there is no adjudication. Yes, there's an admission of guilt. Yes, they're taken into consideration at sentencing, but there's no adjudication like there would be for an offense that's pled. And that is what this court held in JSH, and that is what courts across the state of Texas, including the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals, has held, that a 1245 offense is not a conviction. And that's really key, because if you look at the expunction statute, final conviction is not defined, and so the court has to look at the kind of common usage, plain meaning of that, and the plain meaning of that in the criminal context pretty consistently is it requires an adjudication of guilt. So the only situation where a 1245 defense could result in a final conviction, because it's unadjudicated, it can't be a final conviction for that offense. The only situation where a 1245 defense could result in a final conviction is in reference to another offense. And I think our briefing points out various instances of this, but where courts have used language like, we can use the assault and the possession of marijuana charges here, but that the possession of marijuana offense resulted in a final conviction for the assault offense, or they would say for another offense, or for any offense, which was, I believe, Justice Kelly's question earlier. And what that does is that breaks the distinction between offense-based and arrest-based. Offense-based says that the offense is considered individually. Arrest-based says you can look at them collectively, but the reason we look at the expunction statute as offense-based is by looking at the language, which is singular. So the test has to become, under an offense-based reading of 5501A2, whether the charge, so singular, if any, has resulted in a final conviction, again, singular. And what that means is the charge, if any, has resulted in a final conviction is all encompassed, referring to only the singular offense. And so if the offense has not resulted in a final conviction for that particular offense, it is not a final conviction under an offense-based reading of the expunction statute.
May I ask? Go ahead, Kelly.
I want to go back to 1245 for a second. So in this case, it's agreed that the appellee had a plea bargain with an agreed term of punishment, you know, and this other offense was 1245 into this. In that scenario, then, if it's not an adjudication, if it's not a conviction, what does the state get out of a 1245? In other words, it's not being really considered for punishment because punishment is set at a fixed number. So what, you know, what does the state get out of that?
Absolutely, Your Honor. I believe this is also addressed in JSH when I talked about the benefits to defendants about slate cleaning. I believe in the sentence before that, the court in JSH talks about the benefits to, like, the prosecution, that it, while defendants enjoy the slate clearing, kind of prosecutors enjoy the docket clearing kind of function. And also, to the extent that there is no benefit for the state, the reality is that 1245 an offense requires the state's consent. So if the state doesn't feel that it's getting anything out of 1245 an offense, it doesn't have to consent and it does not have to do it. It's not a right, it's something that's within the discretion of the prosecutor to move forward.
Well, that kind of brings the issue up here. Does is the state believing that these are adjudications and they can't be expunged because this issue hasn't come up yet or not?
I don't believe the state would. And I believe it's on like page 63 or 65 of the record, but the actual 1245 in this case, it's on page 65 of the clerk's record, but it expressly states that these are unadjudicated. So it's very clear from the form. It should be clear to the prosecutors who are in practice that these are unadjudicated offenses, and so that there's no confusion about how it technically rolls up and does not get folded into a final conviction. It is considered at sentencing, but it's not been adjudicated.
And I've got another question, Mr. Bragg. You talk about 1245 resulting in slate clearing, but for the defendant, does it really without the marriage of an expunction? Because your client, you say, has been burdened for years with a possession of marijuana, 1245, but she or he is here today asking for an expunction because really the slate hadn't been cleared. Because landlords still know, daycares still know, schools still know. So what is 1245 without an expunction for the defense?
So, Your Honor, they are different slate clearings, to be clear. The slate clearing that a defendant enjoys because of 1245 is that they no longer have offenses hanging kind of over their shoulder that prosecution could be brought for them at a later time. That's why the key aspect is that prosecution is barred if they're taken into consideration. The expunction statute provides a similar function so that an individual's record isn't a permanent shadow over the rest of their life. But there's no reason why those two things can't be read harmoniously to say that an individual doesn't have to look over their shoulder about these offenses, and they can have these records cleared so long as they meet the requirements of the expunction statute. Mm. And that's really the key. There's a lot of focus on kind of various scenarios and things, but the reality is the court in RPGP was very clear that, like, regardless of kind of policy directives, the court said that, you know, construing the expunction statute is a linguistically complex, the expunction statute is linguistically complex and presents a statutory construction challenge that courts at all levels have grappled with. But this is all the more reason to stick to the statute's language wherever it leads and adhere to principles of our precedents have established rather than relying on extrinsic constructs to advance presumed policy objectives.
But nothing in RPGP involved somebody who, there was no issue of somebody admitting guilt to the offense that was still lingering, right? That's the difference between 1245 and what was at issue in RPGP. From a policy perspective, should we erase the slate for somebody who has stood up in court and admitted to guilt for that offense?
Absolutely, Your Honor. You should, because that is exactly what the court in RPGP was getting at when it said not trying to accomplish policy objectives versus following the language of the statute. And while a purpose of the expunction statute is to clear records, and there have been cases that have said, you know, an admission of guilt, and that's what typically the pre-RPGP line of cases that appellant cites in their brief, leads to a conclusion. That's ultimately, if you look at the language from RPGP about following the text of the statute, that's the tail wagging the dog. And really, if you look at RPGP as well, it's instructive on this kind of wrongful arrest idea that shows up in case law, which is kind of what you're getting at, Justice Kelly. But I did not realize I was out of time.
Can he continue in answering your question? You may proceed, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. So functionally, though, like, the RPGP is instructive because, like, the dissent actually looked at and made an argument for, you know, this was not a wrongful arrest, and so we shouldn't be allowing for an expunction here, and the majority still did. And in RPGP, the offense that was being expunged was a DWI offense, and the individual was arrested with a blood alcohol content, I believe, of 0.15. So it was not a wrongful arrest in the colloquial sense, but the court said we have to follow an offense-based construction, we have to follow the language of the statute, and in following the language of the statute, expunction is warranted, and the same is true here. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And let's hear again from Ms. Hudson for the state. And counsel, you'll have 5 minutes. Thank you.
So I want to address a couple of points that Mr. Bragg said. One thing in particular, the slate clearing effect of the expunction. While that is true, one thing to keep in mind, especially in this case that was 1245, there is still a conviction on the criminal record. So clearing this 1245 offense might help, but it won't necessarily help with her getting housing or approved for jobs or anything else, because that other conviction still exists.
Well, drug convictions, though, are treated differently than
this
Class
is true.
A misdemeanors, so for assault.
It might make a difference, yes, but it is, there is still a criminal record out there, so it's not completely clearing the record. One other piece of that is that he mentioned the, you know, being barred for the statute of limitations versus being barred for some other reason are not mutually exclusive. While that's true, by that theory, then could someone with a conviction just wait out the statute of limitations and then get the conviction expunged too? Doesn't seem to really make sense with the rest of the, you know, statute construction of the expunction statute.
What of their argument that you've waived this issue because you didn't bring it up in your opening brief?
So actually the brief addressed both. One of the issues that was brought up in the brief was that they didn't meet the legally sufficient requirements to prove they were entitled to an expunction, and that's the whole statute. So although we mentioned, you know, statute of limitations was mentioned kind of in passing on both sides, we did concentrate more on the final conviction because that was more what was concentrated on at the trial court. But we did mention the issue that they just failed to meet the requirements, and that's all the requirements of the statute. The one other thing I wanted to address, Sorry, I'm having trouble reading my notes. Another distinction from RPGP is that something to keep in mind, RPGP dealt with the arrest-based versus offense-based. Well, 1245 is really kind of bypass both of those, because you can do a 1245 from multiple arrests, multiple transactions, multiple counties have different offenses. They can 1245 into the same offense. And they used to do that all the time, where you have to get agreement from each prosecutor to do the 1245, but you can do it from multiple different events and arrests. So it doesn't really have to do with the fact that this particular arrest resulted in a conviction. It could be from something else. So that's another distinction from RPGP. One other piece was that regarding the question about In re Ross that referenced the prior 1245 offenses. They were not all based on the arrest-based theory. In fact, most of them stemmed from In re ORT in 2013, and that court held that a defendant's admission to guilt to an unadjudicated offense becomes a part of the judgment and the defendant's criminal record. So it resulted in a final conviction and expunction was denied. There were a couple of the courts that talked about it in 1245 context that did mention the arrest-based, because that was the common understanding at the time, but they were all based on the fact that the 1245 offense itself resulted in the final conviction.
So. And the 1245 has to be listed on the judgment, or does it have to be listed on the judgment? When you have your final conviction and you have another offense that's 1245'd into it, what information, if any, is on the judgment?
I'm not really sure.
You have a judgment here that will say one, you know, in the record here.
It is in the record, and I know that that it's in the plea and bar agreement that it lists the offenses that were 1245'd, and it lists it's in the conviction record of that court. I'll be honest, I don't know if it actually states it on the judgment that there was another offense 1245'd or not. Back to, I'm not a prosecutor. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is it's incorporated in that judgment, and that's certainly the way that the previous courts have talked about it. So if there's any other questions.
Any other questions, judges? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We appreciate both sides and your presentation today. Thank you very much. The case will be submitted. Thank you, and the court will stand in recess.